tonight on the season premiere of Dateline.
My name is Colin Strickland. I'm a bicycle racer based in Austin, Texas.
Colin and Caitlin dated for about 3 years.
They seemed very happy together.
I'm Mariah Wilson. I also go by Mo.
She was this rising star crushing these races.
Colin drops her off. An intruder shoots and kills her.
This pretty distinct Jeep Cherokee was in the area.
So this is somebody who's watching.
Absolutely. This very expensive bicycle was missing. Colin is being looked at.
All of a sudden, the suspected killer is gone.
It's a really good place for people to hide out. The land of the unwanted and the wanted.
You can get rid of your phone, get rid of all identifying material. You can't escape.
It's a small world.
Life's kind of a movie itself. Talk about a story.
So why was a champion cyclist murdered? And where did her suspected killer go? I'm Lester Holt, and this is Dateline. Here's Keith Morrison with The Last Ride.
Just look at her, this bright young star.
Mo has bridged that gap.
Right here, captured on video, is that rarest of things. The thrilling, apparently unstoppable rise of a virtual unknown.
Mo Wilson coming through.
To the top of one of the most competitive and punishing endurance sports there is. Gravel racing, a high mileage mashup of mountain biking and road racing.
This is Mariah Wilson, the winner of round one of the 2022 Lifetime Grand Prix.
Which makes what happened this year, a year that should have been the highlight of her young life, a tragedy instead. And an international murder mystery. One that millions followed as events unfolded in real time.
NBC's Morgan Chesky is in Austin with the very latest.
A mystery that took us from the dusty fields of Texas to the birch woods of upstate New York to the curling surf of Central America. Where U.S. Marshals went looking for a suddenly famous fugitive and encountered a gaggle of unsuspecting characters caught quite off guard.
Afterwards, my brain just went, whoa, and I was like, well, that was by everything. That's why it was all like that.
Tonight, we'll tell you the whole story. Beginning in Austin, Texas, on the night of May 11th, with a volley of gunshots.
A developing story tonight. 25-year-old Mariah Wilson recently burst onto the competitive cycling scene. Last week, she went to Austin, Texas for a race, but she was found dead in the home where she was staying.
And until that very moment, it had all seemed so full of promise.
Really impressive ride by Mariah Wilson.
She came seemingly out of nowhere, very little background in the sport of cycling.
Cycling journalists Ben Delaney.
She was showing up and beating all the women and most of the men.
And Betsy Welch.
It was a really fast and furious rise to the top.
Yeah.
She really was dominating early this season and had a beautiful air about her, was a great racer, was friendly and kind. So I think people were really sort of like, wow, who is she? And wow, we're really excited to watch her.
I'm Mariah Wilson. I also go by Mo.
Here she was in a Zoom interview for Flow Sports.
I really enjoy that laid back feeling that often accompanies the really serious racing that we also have started to develop.
Charming, unassuming Mariah could talk for hours about equipment, about strategy, her unusual God-given endurance, and her happy young life, as here in a yet-to-be-released podcast recorded a month before her death.
Well, I grew up in Vermont. A big part of my upbringing was just like I was on skis before I could basically walk. Then when I was like 7 or something, I think my dad asked me and my brother if we wanted to race. And we were like, yeah, of course. Like, we love skiing. Like, it just seemed so natural. So we started racing. When I graduated from college in 2019, I bought a gravel bike that summer, moved to San Francisco, and just like immediately started to fall in love with racing. The transition from skiing to racing bikes just felt really natural.
On that May night in Austin, Mariah was looking forward to her biggest challenge yet, the premier racing event of the year, Unbound Gravel, a brutal 200-mile contest.
It's the Super Bowl of gravel.
It was to be Mariah's breakout moment, this remarkable 25-year-old.
She was a one-of-a-kind talent. She was the one to watch, wow. The one to beat.
Was to be. On May 10th, 2022, Mariah Wilson traveled from her home in San Francisco to Austin for a local race. To save money, she bunked at a friend's tiny apartment. This one. It's above a garage on a back alley. The following day, May 11th, reporter Betsy Welch published this glowing profile in Velo News. Late that afternoon, Mariah's friend went out for the evening, leaving Mariah on her own. And a few hours later, when the friend came home,
she sees Wilson lying on the bathroom floor, covered in blood.
What happened? We asked veteran homicide investigator Liz Thompson to review the case for us.
This person isn't breathing. There's a lot of blood. It's going to be very, very confusing to the friend who found Mariah and doing the best that she knows how to save her in doing CPR.
She kept her wits about her and called 911.
They're in the apartment above the garage. Go to the alley.
But by the time paramedics arrived, it was too late. Mariah Wilson was pronounced dead. And shock on top of shock, by then the cause of her death was all too obvious. Mariah had been shot multiple times right there in the bathroom of that tiny apartment. It was murder.
Can you check any calls around the area for potential shots fired or loud noise?
But why? Why would anyone want to kill Mariah? Oh, there was a clue, big and impossible to miss. It was the most expensive piece of equipment Mariah Wilson owned.
This amazing, very specialized, very expensive bicycle was missing. It was gone.
They've got to be thinking that might have been the reason this happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, in fact, the terrible chain of events was just beginning.
When we come back, an ear witness. Did he hear the killer escape?
He said he was in the garage and opened the door just partially, and then he heard someone running down the stairs.
He also said he may have seen a bike disappearing down the alley.
The part of that plan that doesn't make any sense is why go inside the house and shoot them in the bathroom to get the bicycle?
There were 89 homicides in Austin last year, more than the previous 2 years combined. And this year is on the same bloody pace. So, the murder of Mariah Wilson did not make the news that night or even the next. According to Austin American-Statesman reporter Ryan Otullo,
I don't think anybody paid a lot of attention to it.
Until 2 days after the murder.
When you find out that the victim is a woman in from California for a cycling race, oh my God, she's a really good cyclist. And she was just killed in cold blood inside of a house that she was staying in a relatively safe neighborhood in Austin, I think it shook everyone.
That's when the news of Mariah's murder made its way to Betsy Welch.
How did you hear what happened?
Word traveled up to me somehow from someone in the cycling industry. I was on a bike ride. And I sort of lost feeling in my body.
Just seemed like a random thing? Nobody knew.
I mean, no. Nobody knew what was going on. I mean, there's no other way to describe it than disbelief and shock.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that those words don't carry weight because they're describing something that's so inexplicable, but that's what it was. What do you do? How can this be real? Is this really real?
Intelligent, hardworking, a gracious competitor, no known enemies. Shot dead in the bathroom of an Austin apartment just weeks before an important race. And there was almost, but not quite, a witness. The landlord, who lived in a separate house on the property, happened to be in the garage, directly below the apartment, tinkering with his cars. His conversation with police was recounted in an affidavit later filed in court.
He said he was in the garage between 8:30 and 9:30 p.m. and opened the door just partially, and then he heard someone running down the stairs.
But, and this is a strange thing, well, the landlord told police he heard someone run down these steps. There's no indication he mentioned hearing gunshots, but a gun was fired in the apartment, no doubt about that. 9mm shell casings scattered on the floor. Proof a pistol had been fired multiple times. A semi-automatic weapon of that sort, does it make a lot of noise?
It can.
160 decibels worth. Louder than a jet engine at takeoff. If a 9mm pistol was fired in the room right above his head, it's likely the landlord would have heard it. If he didn't, well, said Thompson, maybe the shooting happened before the landlord opened the garage door, which could have startled Mariah's
killer. And the exit down the stairs may have actually been prompted by the sound of the garage door
opening. Quite possible, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The landlord told police something else, too. He wasn't sure, but he may have seen a bike whizzing down the alley. So, was Mariah killed for her racing bike?
But the part of that plan that doesn't make any sense is, why did you go inside the house and shoot them in the bathroom to get the bicycle?
Something else that didn't make any sense. During their search of the neighborhood that night, police found Mariah's bike. Here, hidden in the back alley, less than 70 feet from the apartment where she was shot.
They found the bicycle basically in a cluster of bamboo.
What would that be all about?
That is a really good question. It could be that part of the plan was to make it look like a robbery for the bike. It could be symbolic, taking the bicycle and dumping in the bushes, which seems a little odd.
If it wasn't a robbery gone wrong, then the obvious conclusion? Mariah Wilson was the target.
Nice job, Mo. Way to do it at the end on Double Peak.
Oh, my God.
Which meant the last known person to have seen her alive that evening was clearly going to be a person of interest. Mariah's friend told them Mariah spent the early evening with a man, a fellow gravel racer. But that presented its own set of complications because that other rider was a local celebrity.
My name is Colin Strickland. I'm a bicycle racer based in Austin, Texas.
Coming up.
If you were to draw the ideal cyclist, I think he looks like Colin Strickland.
And maybe she was his match.
It's great. I'm stoked to be here.
When Dateline continues.
Austin, Texas was once home to America's most famous cyclist ever, Lance Armstrong, who helped create a passion for anything cycling in this town. In 2012, Armstrong was stripped of his 7 Tour de France titles after admitting he used performance-enhancing drugs.
And Colin's out. There's your top 5 leaders back out on the road.
But in recent years, a new hometown hero emerged. 35-year-old Colin Strickland.
Colin
is one of the top gravel racers in the country. He was also the last person known to have seen Mariah Wilson alive. Now,
The police wanted to learn everything they could about him.
This is the Allroad. It's pretty much the Swiss Army knife bike. It can
clear. If you were to draw the ideal cyclist, I think he looks like Colin Strickland. 6'2", skinny but powerful.
Colin was so widely admired, so charismatic, said reporter Ryan Otullo. He seemed to create his own gravitational pull.
You know, he's from the Austin area, born and raised, went to the University of Texas, and people wanted to race with him, train with him, be around him. He was a friendly guy and just beloved in the Austin cycling community.
Colin came out of nowhere in 2019 when he won gravel racing's premier event, Unbound Gravel. The same 200-mile race that was supposed to have been Mariah Wilson's coming out party.
Guys are looking good.
He was picked up by a host of sponsors. One of them, Red Bull, was so happy to sign Colin, they produced this high-end video to showcase him.
Some of the best athletes in the world are Red Bull athletes.
Journalist, gravel cycler, and friend of Colin's, James Stout, helped out on the production.
Tell us what you've done to get ready. He went to Red Bull to do loads of testing, right? And they have this athlete performance center up in Santa Monica, and they really have a battery of people who can help you be the best that you can be.
Colin was part of that crew of sort of elite guys. We call it the pointy end of the race. So that's the pro end. And for those people, it's very competitive.
But as Colin told Flow Sports, his life was more than just gravel racing. He was trained as an environmental scientist, and he was a tinkerer. He took pride in an old travel trailer he restored himself.
These are antique-style push knob with dimmers for the LED lighting.
In cycling, you see a number of top cyclists as one-dimensional. They wake up, they train, they eat healthy, they lift weights, they go to sleep, they do it again. That didn't really fit Colin Strickland in his training. I mean, he was dedicated, he enjoyed the sport, but he enjoyed many other things. And I think that was part of his charm.
The weather's perfect in my book. Looks breezy and warm.
In July of 2021, Colin was racing at the Belgian Waffle Ride in San Diego. And one of the other riders there was the rising star, Mariah Wilson.
It's great. I'm stoked to be here.
And it was no surprise, said Colin's friend James Stout, that Mariah and Colin met and hit it off.
It's like a traveling circus in a way, right? You see these people every couple of weeks throughout the summer, right? You're here, you're there, you do the race. And so like you're in these nice bars with wealthy people who buy you a bunch of beers, because often all the people who are doing very well end up in the same party afterwards.
A few months later, October 2021, Mariah was in Austin staying with her female friend at this very same garage apartment. And that's when the fling happened, Colin and Mariah. But what isn't clear is what Colin told Mariah, if anything, about the state of his long-term relationship with another woman, a woman named Caitlin. 3 months later, when Mariah ran into Colin at the UCI Cyclocross World Championships in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Caitlin was right there with him. Mariah, clearly caught off guard, texted Colin. Hey, so I would like to talk to you at some point. This weekend was strange for me, and I just want to know what's going on. If you just want to be friends, seems to be the case, then that's cool. But I'd like to talk about it because honestly, my mind has been going in circles and I don't know what to think.
She's confused. Mm-hmm. She sees the two of them at an event and she's confused.
Are we together or not?
Yes. Yeah.
Colin texted Mariah the following day. Hey, Mo, I feel very for putting you in a position where you don't feel comfortable. Caitlin came along to a meeting about the Sprinter Spartan Hotel project. In hindsight, this was not a good idea.
It's this sort of vague, not really an explanation, and he definitely does not answer her question about their relationship. So right off the bat, I'm seeing this very poor communication. This is not matter of fact. It's not up front. You know, he's deceitful. He's deceitful to her. He's clearly deceitful to Caitlin.
What Colin didn't reveal in his text to Mariah was that he and Caitlin were very much together, a couple. We don't know how much contact Colin had or didn't have with Mariah after this uncomfortable January run-in. But 4 months later, just a day after returning to Austin for a race, Mariah was murdered. That friend Mariah had been staying with told police. Mariah texted her around 5:30 p.m. to say that she and Colin had plans to go swimming. The police affidavit recounts what Mariah's friend did when she heard that news.
She went back home to talk to Mariah about that.
But we don't know what they said to each other, is that
No, right? But I think it's not too much of a leap to think if your friend tells you they're going to go swimming with a friend, why would you come home to talk about that unless you had some concerns?
Concerns about seeing Colin? And yet, they did go out together. Meaning Colin Strickland was the last person known to have seen Mariah Wilson alive.
Coming up.
Colin is being looked at. He's the last person to see her.
And detectives uncover their first major clue.
They were able to capture this pretty distinct Jeep Cherokee that was in the area. It had this really large, complicated bike rack on it.
Early in the morning after Mariah Wilson was murdered, detectives showed up at the door of local cycling hero, Colin Strickland.
Colin is being looked at. Okay, he's the last person to see her. So, you know, we need to make sure that he isn't the suspect.
According to the police affidavit, Colin went down to the station and willingly answered questions for hours, giving a detailed account of what he and Mariah did on the night she died.
They have immediately a timeline.
Yeah.
And
precise timeline.
Oh, precise. To the minute.
Yeah.
And this becomes extremely crucial.
Police didn't just take Colin's word for it. They found silent witnesses, impeccably honest ones, the electronics.
Everything in this case rides on and rests on electronic data.
Investigators learned the exact minute Mariah left the apartment that early evening. How? She triggered her own unique code to this high-tech electronic lock on the door.
Not only a door that could record when it was locked and unlocked, but it had very specific,
yes,
only a certain person could do it.
Correct.
And it would record when that certain person did it.
Yes. The door lock code showed at 5:55 p.m. is when Mariah left the friends and locked the door.
So police could compare that to what Colin told them. He said he picked up Mariah on his motorcycle and they went for an early evening swim at a local pool and then for a burger. And there was security video that confirmed that.
At 8:16 p.m. is when Strickland and Mariah are seen leaving the parking lot of the burger place on the motorcycle.
19 minutes later, at 8:35 p.m., another security camera caught Colin now riding alone and heading away from the garage apartment, apparently after dropping off Mariah. And 1 minute after that, Mariah was at the apartment's front door.
At 8:36, the door lock code indicates that Mariah unlocked the door and entered the property.
12 minutes later, 8:48 p.m., another security cam picked up Colin riding his motorcycle 8 miles away from the apartment.
From the amount of time in these records, does it show that he could have gone upstairs with her and, you know, spent some time with her there, or did he just drop her off and leave?
So there's no lag of him stopping. It is seeing him in the alley and then immediately seeing him continue on.
The data couldn't lie, and apparently Colin didn't. There just wasn't enough time for him to kill Mariah, steal her bike, stash it, and get so far away. But the data also showed something else from the same electronic door lock that recorded Mariah's arrival.
It did not show it was again locked.
Which meant the door was open for the killer to walk right in. But who was that? Detectives scoured the neighborhood looking for more witnesses, human or electronic. And here's where police got their first major clue. Video from a nearby Ring security camera. It showed a black SUV traveling on a street just north of the apartment 10 minutes before Mariah and Colin arrived.
So they were able to capture this pretty distinct Jeep Cherokee that was in the area. It had this luggage rack and it had this really large, complicated bike rack on it.
11 minutes later, another Ring cam showed this in the back alley. It was dark by then. But look, the same black Jeep driving up the alley just a few feet behind the apartment. Watch carefully as it goes out of frame, and then the brake lights come on, and the Jeep appears to stop. The time was 8:37 p.m., 1 minute after Mariah unlocked the door.
So this is somebody who was watching?
Absolutely. 1 minute is no coincidence.
No.
So was the driver of the Jeep following Colin and Mariah? Liz Thompson doesn't think so. At least, not tailing them.
Colin had picked up Mariah on his motorcycle. Well, I have training in trailing people.
Uh-huh.
And trailing a motorcycle is very, very difficult.
Especially avoiding them seeing you.
Exactly.
Instead, she said, whoever was in the Jeep may have been using some sort of tracking app and had been using it all evening. That way, they'd know where Colin picked up Mariah and could be there lying in wait when the two returned. All just speculation, mind you, but for police, the Jeep was a major lead. Its driver, an obvious person of interest. Which is why this detail from the police affidavit became extremely interesting. When detectives went to Colin's house that morning after the murder, they saw three vehicles there. His BMW motorcycle, an old Mercedes-Benz, and a black Jeep Cherokee with a very elaborate bike rack.
Coming up, whose Jeep was it? Someone very close to Colin.
She struck me as the sort of person who would want something and go get it.
When Dateline continues.
It was potentially a huge break in the investigation. Right here on Ring video, recorded near the apartment where Mariah Wilson was murdered, a black SUV, much like the one detectives saw in Colin Strickland's driveway.
This very, very, very similar vehicle is parked there.
Had to be the same SUV. So they asked Colin about it, and he told them the Jeep wasn't his. According to Colin, it belonged to his longtime girlfriend. Her name, as you've already heard, was Caitlin. Caitlin Armstrong, age 34.
She's intelligent, speaks multiple languages, from what I understand, licensed realtor, taught yoga.
So now the detectives needed to know everything they could about this Caitlin Armstrong.
Was Caitlin Armstrong related at all to the famous Armstrong Lance?
No relation.
Was she a serious cyclist?
Caitlin is probably what you would call a hobby cyclist.
Uh-huh.
Above average, just not at the level of Colin and Mariah, which, you know, nobody was.
Caitlin was a fun-loving, adventurous person and very smart as well, too. She was fantastic at math. I remember that.
Kristen Mostrom knew Caitlin from childhood. They both grew up in Livonia, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit.
Her family lived two blocks from us, and it was her single mom. So the mom was raising these three kids.
Caitlin was the middle child with an older brother and younger sister.
Christine was her younger sister, and she was always almost like a motherly figure to her, a good, nurturing sister to Christine.
After college, Caitlin traveled the world for yoga training mostly. Bali, Iceland, Mexico. Eventually, she ended up in Austin, and that's where she crossed paths with Colin Strickland.
I think they'd obviously had their ups and downs in the past, but at that time, they were very happy together.
James Stout met Caitlin a year ago, one night over dinner.
Colin had introduced us, and she struck me as the sort of person who would want something and go get it. Colin's a very determined person, and she's a very determined person, and I was like, holy shit, they're like the Power Rangers, you know, when they like come together and make a big Power Ranger.
And so it was, or seemed to be. Remember the old travel trailer Colin loved so much?
I'm building a tiny house inside of a lightweight mobile shell.
He started a business, collecting vintage trailers and refurbishing them with high-end interiors. Caitlin was his business partner.
I think mechanically he was inside of these trailers, fixing them up, retrofitting them. I think financially she helped him.
Even as she built her own career in real estate.
She had a very successful career selling flipping houses.
And she was an avid yoga practitioner.
I think she had a lot of good things going for her.
But now it seemed very likely that her Jeep was at the murder scene. And another thing, Colin told the police a few months earlier he had purchased two guns, one for himself and one for Caitlin, 9mm handguns, the same type of weapon used to kill Mariah. It was time to bring Caitlin in for questioning. And it just so happened she was wanted on a misdemeanor charge for an unpaid medical bill, $650 for Botox treatment.
They thought that they had this valid warrant.
So they put her in handcuffs and brought her to the Austin Police Department.
What can you tell about that first conversation with Caitlin?
They had her car on the video. It had to be her. Who else could it be? Colin was on the motorcycle.
They have what looks like her vehicle, but they don't actually have video of her getting out of the vehicle.
According to the affidavit, when detectives confronted Caitlin about the video they did have of a Jeep that looked like hers at the scene of the crime around the time Mariah was killed, Caitlin seemed to nod her head, but said not a word.
And she wasn't giving a lot of information.
She's nodding like I'm nodding now or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, which is a great cause of concern for a skilled investigator.
And about then, the police discovered what they thought was a problem with that warrant they'd used to arrest her.
It wasn't so much that the warrant wasn't valid, it just had a mistake, so they couldn't sure. say at that moment that that was exactly her. I think there was a digit wrong in
It was like a typo or something.
Date of birth, exactly, yeah. It was a typo.
Detectives had no choice but to let her go. Well, they dug a little deeper into the story of Caitlin Armstrong.
Coming up, Caitlin's relationship with Colin.
My understanding was that emotionally, maybe something was lacking there.
And her contacts with Mariah.
Caitlin started to follow her on Instagram, contacted her by phone and said, Colin is my boyfriend and back off.
Caitlin Armstrong was a puzzlement, the person of interest in a murder who seemed anything but homicidal.
She's leading this seemingly sort of normal millennial life, if you will, a yoga teacher, and
Zen yoga. I mean, somebody who should be so calm and relaxed and...
Exactly. Where are the red flags? Where are the indicators of violence?
Still, detectives were taking a hard look at Caitlin and her relationship with Colin Strickland, business partners and life partners, but after 3 years together, perhaps sparks weren't flying quite so frequently anymore.
My understanding and speaking with some people around them was that, you know, emotionally, maybe something was lacking there that this relationship was convenient for both of them because they were business partners.
If their business was the glue holding Colin and Caitlin together, by December of 2021, that too was under stress.
They're trying to do this complicated real estate transaction, which goes badly.
Yeah.
So he files a lawsuit.
According to court records, after a land deal he and Caitlin were pursuing went south, Colin sued his realtor and his contractor, among others, for breach of contract. He was seeking more than $1 million in damages. So, turmoil on the business side. And on the personal side, as we know, Colin's fling with Mariah during the fall of 2021.
And then that was brief, and he gets back with Caitlin. So it almost seemed to me middle schoolish.
It strikes me as maybe some people who just weren't too sure what they wanted to do with their lives yet, their romantic lives at least.
I think that's probably a good characterization.
But how did it look to Caitlin? Mariah Wilson was 9 years younger and a rising star in Colin's sport. It was stiff competition.
The brass ring was slipping away.
In his interview with police, Colin admitted he had lied to Caitlin about his last encounter with Mariah the night of the murder. Immediately after dropping Mariah off, he texted Caitlin, "Hey, are you out? I went to drop some flowers for Allison at her son's house up north and my phone died." He said he had to keep his friendship with Mariah a secret from Caitlin. He actually changed Mariah's name in his phone contact list and deleted their text messages so Caitlin couldn't find them. Why all the deception? Maybe because during the fling, as Colin would tell police, Caitlin phoned Mariah, probably staying at the same apartment where she was later shot to death, and said, "Hey, do you know that I pretty much live at Colin's house?" And after the murder, police found a witness who told them that wasn't the only call Caitlin made to Mariah.
The detectives got a hold of a friend of Mariah's after the murder a few days later. And that friend is in the report under a pseudonym, Jane.
According to the affidavit, Jane asked to remain anonymous, fearing she would be targeted by Caitlin. She told police Mariah and Colin's liaison didn't end with the fling. Jane said the two had continued to see each other in what she called an on-again, off-again relationship. Jane also said Mariah had received numerous calls from Caitlin in the fall of 2021 telling her to stay away from Colin. So many calls, she said, that Mariah blocked Caitlin's phone number.
And Jane talked about how Mariah reported to her that Caitlin started to follow her on Instagram.
That scared her a bit.
Yeah, it bothered her because this is a woman who'd already contacted her by phone and said, basically, Colin is my boyfriend or mine, and back off.
The day after the interview, Jane, police heard from a second anonymous tipster who said she witnessed Caitlin's reaction when she realized Colin and Mariah had continued to see each other.
And at that point, according to the tipster, Caitlin Armstrong became enraged. She was furious.
The tipster told police, in her fit of anger, Caitlin said,
"She said, I am going to kill that woman."
Well, yeah. Probably not a wise thing to say about anybody, but when that woman winds up dead, it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
For those who knew calm, personable Caitlin, none of this made any sense.
I didn't perceive any of that, no sort of jealousy, no sort of controlling relationship behavior. It's so easy to fall into these gendered stereotypes of like crazy, jealous girlfriend. And like, I didn't see that.
6 days after the murder, detectives asked Colin to come back to the station for a second interview. This one focused on Caitlin. We obtained the transcript. And here is the gist of what he said as, hour after hour, they asked him about his girlfriend. "Do I think Caitlin could kill somebody? No, I don't. She's an incredibly kind, caring, sweet person who has helped me take care of my aging mother.
Was she jealous? No, said Colin. She's by far one of the least volatile women I have dated in terms of anger and jealous and emotion. I have never seen anything that was alarming.
Why was that Jeep near the crime scene? I think it could be that she went to see, like, a spiritual, like an energy worker that could potentially be in that area.
Why did she have a gun?
Because, Colin reminded police, he bought her one for protection. Caitlin had a sketchy experience in a parking lot, some guy road raging at her, and she was physically shaking.
It was all an unqualified defense of Caitlin, but detectives weren't necessarily buying it. They wanted to bring Caitlin in again for questioning, except Caitlin was nowhere to be found.
Coming up, a missing murder suspect, leaving her lover in crisis.
He says something like, I feel like a bomb's gone off.
When Dateline continues.
I've been in contact with her parents regarding the race and regarding the struggle that a lot of us are having with this.
On May 14th, 2022, just 3 days after Mariah was murdered, Gravel Locos, the race she had come to town to compete in, went on without her.
They basically said, we want you all to do what Mo wants you all to do. She wants you to race.
So the racers struggled through it, many of them still grieving the loss of Mariah and wondering why Colin wasn't racing either.
You have cyclists wanting to know what just happened, where two of the stars of our sport are involved, entangled in this really horrific shooting.
Investigators thought they had a good idea what happened to Mariah, but they needed proof. On May 17th, 6 days after the murder, lab results came back on those shell casings found near Mariah's body.
The firearm that was used, semi-automatic firearm, leaves casings behind.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have the technology to be able to look at those casings that will have unique marks on them, sort of like the firearm leaves behind a fingerprint.
Police had seized both Colin and Caitlin's guns. When they tested Caitlin's, the lab said it found significant potential her gun was the murder weapon.
It's very strong evidence.
2 days later, everyone could see what investigators thought when that police affidavit became public.
This affidavit comes out. They think Caitlin Armstrong killed Mariah Wilson.
Police asked a judge for an arrest warrant. The charge, first-degree murder.
It's only a matter of time before they get Caitlin Armstrong into custody. And days pass, she's not in custody.
Caitlin wasn't in custody because she was gone. When they brought Colin in for that second interview, they asked him where she was. No idea, said Colin. In fact, he said he hadn't seen Caitlin since May 13th, 2 days after the murder. And when he tried texting her, he said, she did not respond.
A municipal court judge issued a warrant for Armstrong's arrest for the offense of murder.
If they could find her. So the next call was to the U.S. Marshals.
On May 18th, the Austin Police Department requested the assistance from the Lone Star Fugitive Task Force to locate and apprehend Caitlin Armstrong.
With the Fugitive Task Force now on Caitlin's trail, her father went on national television to defend his daughter.
We love you, Katie, and we are going to figure this out. I know how she thinks, and I know what she believes, and I know that she just would not do something like this. I know her.
I saw her father interviewed, and that's really difficult for a family.
Of course.
On one hand, you don't want to believe that your child, especially, did something so heinous and so planned out. But on the other hand, it's a murder. I have seen families struggle with this. What do we do?
The same day Caitlin was named a fugitive, Colin released his first public statement since Mariah's murder. It read, in part, "I am reeling from grieving Mo Wilson's death and from the facts that have emerged during the investigation. There is no way to adequately express the regret and torture I feel about my proximity to this horrible crime." Consequences. In a matter of days, Colin's carefully curated life fell apart. He dropped that million-dollar lawsuit. And one by one, his sponsors dropped him. Allied Cycle, Specialized, Rafa, NV Composites.
I was really worried. I saw the sponsors leaving itself, and I was like, oh, this isn't good for him. Like, I hope he's not in a dark place.
James Stout decided to reach out to Colin.
If he's made a relationship error, then he shouldn't have done that. And hopefully he can learn from that and become a better person. But I don't want him to feel alone and, like, do something terrible. I think he said something like, I feel like a bomb's gone off in my hands.
Colin pulled himself off the race circuit and turned his once public social media accounts private. For weeks after Mariah's murder, his Instagram bio read, "I used to ride bikes."
So we don't have all the information. If he cheated on her and she didn't know and they weren't on a break, that is wrong, right? And he shouldn't have done it and it was stupid. But I don't think anyone can reasonably expect that to end in the other person's death.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Marshals revved up their search with agents working around the clock trying to track down Caitlin. Their working theory? She was still hiding out in Austin somewhere. But there was no sign of her or her black Jeep Cherokee. That is until May 25th, 14 days after the murder, when investigators released this, recorded on a security camera at Austin's International Airport, a slender, fair-haired woman about to board a plane with a yoga mat.
It was evident on video surveillance and boarding passes that Armstrong had fled the Austin area.
Coming up.
Attention shifts from this horrific crime to, oh my gosh, the suspected killer is gone.
A very zen suspected killer.
Wherever she's going, she plans to do yoga, teach yoga. That's a big clue.
Day after day, the mystery grew, confounding seasoned investigators, and even the U.S. Marshals seemed to be stumped.
This morning, U.S. Marshals are actively searching for Caitlin Armstrong.
A woman in Texas accused of shooting and killing an up-and-coming cyclist from the Bay Area.
Police say Armstrong has not been seen in nearly 2 weeks.
Responsible, they believe, for the cold-blooded killing of Mariah Wilson, that innocent young woman now being portrayed, accurately or not, as Caitlin's unwitting romantic rival. And somehow the awful loss of Mariah seemed shoved into paragraph 2.
And now all of a sudden, attention shifts from this horrific crime to, oh my gosh, the suspected killer is gone.
The only trace of her, this video from the Austin airport.
Nothing seems out of the ordinary except she has a yoga mat with her. So wherever she's going, she plans to do yoga, teach yoga, whatever it is. That's a big clue.
But Caitlin had a big head start. The airport video had been recorded just 3 days after the murder, but it was 11 more days before investigators found it. Where was she going? They dug up the flight records and discovered that Caitlin had flown from Austin to Houston to LaGuardia Airport in New York. Lenny DePaul is a retired U.S. Marshal who's followed the case.
Then it was, you know, well, who picked her up? Where did she go? They were talking to investigators on the ground in New York. The New York, New Jersey Regional Fugitive Task Force of the U.S. Marshals, they came into play.
But they found nothing. May turned to June. No sign of Caitlin. Internally, the marshals upgraded the case to major status, meaning more manpower and more funding, and they asked the public for help.
The Marshal Service posted a cash reward listed at $5,000 for tips leading to the arrest of Armstrong.
Reward money was important. We all know the streets talk.
And talk they did. In early June, the marshals received a credible tip. Somebody had seen Caitlin in upstate New York a few days after she landed in LaGuardia.
Ends up one of her sisters, Christine, lived in New York. She was north of New York City. So they took a look at her. She apparently worked at a campsite. They sent some investigators up there.
Here is the place, Camp Haven, where Caitlin's sister worked. Caitlin was known to be close to Christine, so maybe Caitlin went to her for help? But by the time agents arrived, Caitlin, once again, had vanished. And as the marshals later revealed,
it was learned through a confidential source that Armstrong was transported to the Newark International Airport in New Jersey. And at that time, the direction of travel was unknown.
It was a game of catch-up. Caitlin was still way ahead. She'd been dropped off at Newark Airport on May 18th, but marshals didn't get that tip about it until almost a month later. Still, they checked all flights out of Newark on the 18th, and nobody named Caitlin Armstrong was on any passenger manifest. So did she fly somewhere? Or was the tip a clever bit of misdirection? Where did Caitlin go, and what was she doing for money?
She probably knew that they were going to be looking at all of her bank accounts to know exactly what she was up to, and she needed not just money, but actual cash that she could use.
It was not until June 23rd when they figured out how she got some of that. That's when investigators found Caitlin's Jeep sitting in this CarMax lot back in Austin. She'd sold it on May 13th, the day after police questioned her about the murder of Mariah Wilson.
So that same vehicle that police said pulled up to the house where Mariah was killed, Caitlin takes that vehicle to a dealership, unloads it, sells it for a little over $12,000.
The very next day after she's been in talking to the cops?
Yes.
We believe now that, you know, she has that $12,200 possibly in cash, and that is what is helping her stay under the radar from law enforcement officials.
There's lots of evidence of lots of really complicated thinking.
And plotting, planning, that kind of thinking?
Problem solving, if you will. Think about how difficult airline travel is these days. But yet she did that seemingly very quickly. Selling your vehicle on a normal day is just not something you do on the spur of the moment and quickly. Things like that, it just amazes me that in what seemed like a very short period of time, she carried out some very complex things.
The U.S. Marshals were also amazed that Caitlin, with little time to think or plan an escape, had managed to remain so elusive.
Yeah, this is a very challenging fugitive investigation. You know, with the Marshal Service, you know, we always adopt, you know, the worst of the worst in violent cases. And some fugitives, you know, are caught within, you know, a day or a week or a month.
Not Caitlin. She could be literally anywhere. But she was carrying that yoga mat, remember? And that just had to be a clue.
Coming up.
Her story was, I just moved here. I teach yoga.
A mysterious new arrival in a secluded paradise.
It's a really good place for people to hide out. The land of the unwanted and the wanted.
When Dateline continues.
If you find yourself in Santa Teresa, Costa Rica, you must really have wanted to be here. It's not an easy place to find or get to. T. Lakerson is a true local, born in Santa Teresa to American parents. He grew up here long before the tourists arrived.
When I was a kid, there wasn't a road here, and the people came by boats, and there was a cattle trail, and you can come with a bicycle or a horse or a motorbike sometimes. And then they opened the road up, and then everyone wanted a slice of paradise.
Since the road went in, this little hamlet in Central America has become a mecca for all sorts of people.
There's nature and the ocean, and people are looking for silence and nature, pristine beaches. People also want to come here, and they kind of get like two birds, one stone, where they get to come to Costa Rica and surf and be in the jungle, and then also get to do their yoga.
Some visitors want to do yoga, sure. Others just want to get lost.
It's a really good place for people to hide out. You can really hide out in the mountains, and then tons of people do.
With a whole world out there to search, who would think of looking in this speck on a map? Maybe that's why, back before they put in a road, Santa Teresa was known by a less saintly name, Mal País, the Badlands.
They say like it's like Mal País is the land of the unwanted and the wanted. Sometimes you're both.
And it so happened on a sunny day in the latter part of May, as the U.S. Marshals were casting a domestic net from Austin, Texas, all the way to upstate New York, searching for Caitlin Armstrong, a sandy-haired yoga instructor turned up in Santa Teresa and made her way here to Don John's, a hostel of sorts where, amongst other activities, there is yoga three times a day. The newcomer quickly went from a guest at Don John's to an employee, first working the front desk and then, eventually, realizing her true goal, teaching yoga.
She also became a fixture on the other side of Santa Teresa, the one that comes out after the sun goes down. Few people know the nightlife of Santa Teresa better than Greg Haver. Once a respectable tax lawyer from Long Island, now, much to the chagrin of his mother, he told us, he spends his days surfing and makes his living as a self-avowed beach entrepreneur, owner of the only bar in town. In his new line of work, Greg meets all kinds, including the pretty new yoga instructor.
Tuesday nights are our big nights, hip-hop night, big party. And she was just here with a couple of friends, introduced herself. She called herself Ari.
The more Greg got to know this Ari, the more she seemed like the kind of person he had seen many times before.
Her story was, I just moved here, I teach yoga. Pretty much half the town has the exact same story. Just moved here, I teach yoga. A lot of them leave after a couple of months. So I don't really think anything of it.
But the drinks taste good and go down easy in Santa Teresa. And the next scene that played out in Greg's bar, well, that was a familiar one as well.
She was here maybe two, three times a week, never by herself, always with other friends of mine. You know, usually if a new girl moves to town, a bunch of guys are going to be asking her to hang out. They're usually going to bring him here.
And sure enough, the nights Ari was in Greg's bar, the guys behaved predictably, moths to a light. But one surfer dude seemed to make a real connection. And you've already met him.
Ari. I knew about Ari. I guess we ran into each other. We're both a little weird, I guess. Different ways. But she did yoga. I did yoga. We ended up talking. And she had just gone through a heavy breakup, she had told me. And then I had gone through a breakup. And we were both kind of getting along and talking and sharing.
Talking and sharing. Activities that can sometimes lead to much more, but not for Teal and Ari.
We went on probably like about four dates or something like that. We never kissed, never hooked up. It wasn't like that. She made it clear that she had been traumatized, and I was okay with being a friend and hanging out, and I could understand. She didn't say much, and she kind of did that trick, you answer with a question. So she asked a lot of questions and answered a lot of times with questions so she could kind of lead the conversation.
Ari seemed eager to blend in here, but not eager to reveal too much about herself. Her new friends in this little slice of paradise didn't know why, but they were about to find out.
Coming up, there are certain rules to hiding out. Ari forgot some.
She did some things pretty well to avoid capture, but she was still going to have fun and live it up at the beach in her new life.
This morning, U.S. Marshals leading a coast-to-coast search for a murder suspect. Caitlin Armstrong is accused of fatally shooting professional surfers.
This tiny surf village seems a world away from just about everything. And it seems to have just about everything a visitor would need to relax. Sun, surf, yoga, and sunsets. Ari, the new yoga instructor, seemed to like it here, but did not always seem relaxed. Her new friends noticed she tended to avoid other new arrivals in town.
She was always here with locals. I never saw her here with people who didn't live here.
Greg, the bar owner, also couldn't help but notice that soon after Ari arrived in Santa Teresa, she darkened her flowing hair and chopped it quite a bit shorter. And then there was the request Ari made of her not-quite-boyfriend, Teal.
She always wanted a lot of favors, wanted a lot of information. She wanted me to give her a ride to my motorbike to get the ferry because she needed to go to the hospital.
The hospital? Ari didn't seem sick, and the ferry was a long way off.
And that's it's about an hour and a half, and then it's an hour and a half back. I don't usually do that.
Teal said no, but he also got to wondering about the reason Ari gave for wanting a ride.
She was worried about cops and roadblocks because she said her paperwork wasn't up to date and she didn't want to get stopped.
But she did go on her own. Ari made it all the way to the capital, San Jose, and to this clinic, AVA Surgical Center. We retraced her steps and spoke with an employee here who recognized Ari, but said she checked in under a different name. And her reason for coming here? Cosmetic surgery to alter the appearance of her nose. Ari didn't tell Teal that. She got it around that she'd had some sort of surfing accident. Teal didn't pry, but he told us he got the sense she was troubled somehow.
The person I met was trying to be a cool person. You could tell something had happened in her life that really had broke her.
But of course, he had no idea Ari wasn't really Ari, or that she was a wanted woman. Didn't know that back in the United States, U.S. Marshals searching for Caitlin Armstrong were homing in on the most visible clue from that airport security video, the yoga mat. They started contacting their counterparts in yoga destinations around the world. And before long,
I received a call from security personnel at the United States Embassy in Costa Rica.
Captain Fulvio Fernandez Arias heads a special tourism unit of the Costa Rican police. The embassy people asked him about any new visitors who were also yoga instructors.
We started to contact people in the community who we know to be involved in that activity.
Soon enough, Captain Fernandez heard about the new yogi in Santa Teresa.
We visited commercial hospitality establishments offering these types of activities, and that's how we were able to verify Ms. Armstrong's identity.
6 weeks after Caitlin Armstrong went on the run, good old-fashioned gumshoe policing by the Costa Rican authorities and the U.S. Marshals had them on the verge of capturing this international fugitive. And Caitlin, it was strange, perhaps. As the locals tell it, she began to act less skittish. Didn't seem to be trying so hard to hide in the days and nights that would be her last free ones. Maybe she got comfortable. Too comfortable. The breeze blowing in off the Pacific Ocean can have that effect.
On one hand, you have a fugitive who changes her appearance, changes her name, changes her backstory. She has a new existence. On the other hand, you have this same person who is going to restaurants, to bars, going on dates, practicing yoga, living at a hostel in a room with seven other people.
It's an odd thing to do if you're trying to hide.
Yeah, I think she lacked the discipline, frankly, to not get caught. I mean, she did some things pretty well to avoid capture, but wanted the best of both worlds. She was still going to have fun and live it up at the beach in her new life.
There are many sunny days in Santa Teresa, Costa Rica. And just like the waves that roll in, no two are exactly alike. It was a memorable sunny day in late June. The authorities made their move.
Coming up, Caitlin's life on the run crashes into reality, opening a few eyes.
Afterwards, my brain just went, whoa, and I was like, whoa, that was why everything, that's why it was all like that.
When Dateline continues.
It was June 29th, just another perfect day in Santa Teresa, Costa Rica, when two expats got to talking at Don John's hostel. One was the popular yoga teacher, Ari. The other was a man named Zach Polson, who asked us not to show his face on camera, not after what he saw happen. It all started innocently enough, said Zach.
Yeah, I got her laughing. She was like really like opening up to me. I was making her laugh. That's all my goal, is just make people laugh, have fun. But yeah, we're just hanging out.
Just hanging out, as so many men seem to want to do with Ari.
One thing I do remember, she was talking about John's place, and she was saying how she really likes it because it's like secluded in there. It's like walled off, and everyone's cool that's there. And I was like, yeah, that's why I hang out. I come here.
But just then, just at that moment, was there a change in the air? A whiff of something about to happen? If there was, Zach didn't notice. At first.
And then I remember a guy came in, a Mexican. He said he was from Mexico. And he, really odd, he's asking for a room, went right to her. And she said there should be a room available. Then he said, okay, I'm going to go eat, and I'll be back. He left, and then boom, all of a sudden three cops walked in. And I'm just like, oh, and I still was making jokes as they were yelling at her. Or not yelling at her. They were asking for her documents. We need your documents. And she's like, I don't have any. She just kept giving weird answers. And I was even like, whoa, this girl's obviously lying and hiding something. It was crazy. Those cops were not around. They were there to get her ass.
Get her? They did.
They just put her in there and put her in the back seat between two cops, and there's four of them total. Drove off, and we just did a little wave.
And as they were leaving,
the police said, I'll never see Ari again.
Which turned out to be not quite true.
I'll never see Ari again, but now I get to see Caitlin on the news.
Developing, the woman charged in the death of a world-class cyclist in Austin last month has been extradited to the U.S.
Caitlin Armstrong's arrest after 43 days on the lam made headlines across the U.S., and none bigger than in the town where she was wanted for murder. Ryan Atulo covered the story for the Austin American-Statesman.
Were you surprised they found her?
I was surprised that they found her. I thought that the longer she lasted, the less likely they would find her. So when I heard that she was captured, again, surprised. Another shocker in this case that just kept shocking me.
Back in Santa Teresa, the news about who Ari really was came crashing down like a rogue wave.
And then you start thinking, who else knew her? It's like, oh, I think I saw her with Teal. So actually, I sent him a message. It's like, this is her, right? And he actually ignored it the first time. He didn't know what it was. And then he went and looked at it again. He was like, oh, yeah, that's her.
Maybe some part of Teal Akerson didn't want to believe his Ari was that Caitlin.
Afterwards, my brain just went, whoa, and I was like, well, that was why everything. Come on, we would never imagine. It's a tragic story for everybody. Like, I'm sure everyone, I mean, the girl that got killed and the family and all her friends. And then Caitlin, all her friends and family and her life too. And, you know, people get caught up in emotions and get lost in a turmoil.
And just because hindsight is 20/20, it didn't make seeing the truth any easier. After all, Caitlin had been his rebound after a bad breakup.
I guess she didn't know it, but I like felt like I had no mojo, no spirit after I had gotten dumped. And then it just so happened that it was that was like the one girl I started hanging out with after 2.5 years, and my girl is on the run lying to me about her everything in her name, and it was just my luck.
After the arrest, Zach said he made a rather surprising discovery.
And it's so funny, I ended up finding the documents before the police.
He turned them over to the police, but not before he took some pictures. These documents seemed to hold tantalizing clues.
I was shocked. I was like, holy, that's her sister's passport. That's her passport. That's her credit card. That's her social security card. That's her COVID card. I had more of her documents than I do of my own.
Remember, the U.S. Marshals could not find any record of Caitlin leaving the United States. So did her sister's passport explain that? The cache of documents also included this: a receipt for plastic surgery, more than $6,000 worth. About half the sum Caitlin got when she sold her Jeep. But the patient's name was recorded as Allison Page. So, some other alias, or someone else altogether? To former Detective Liz Thompson, it all looked like part of a plan to evade capture.
She had altered her appearance, including potentially having had some cosmetic surgery or some alteration done to her face.
Yes.
And how do you explain that? Hey, I'm going to go on vacation and dye my hair and get a nose job?
Sure.
How do you explain that?
You can move on quick if you want to.
That's right.
As long as the marshals aren't looking for you.
Yeah.
Surf instructor and beach philosopher Teal Akerson has a slightly different view of Caitlin.
Well, it's a bummer. I need another bummer story. We're just people. We're God's lost children. Everyone's on their life trip trying to figure it out. And no matter how wise you are, how smart, how enlightened you are, how much yoga you know, you're still just one of those people on that ride.
It was a hot summer day, the kind Texas specializes in, when Caitlin Armstrong's ride ended, with her locked in a jail cell, indicted for the murder of Mariah Wilson. Bail was set at $3.5 million. If convicted, she'll face 99 years in prison. But case closed? Hardly. Caitlin Armstrong has a robust defense and a very confident defender.
Caitlin Armstrong is not guilty. And if this case goes to trial, she will be found not guilty.
Coming up, does the defense know something prosecutors don't?
Evidence will come out that Caitlin Armstrong was nowhere near the scene of Miss Wilson's murder.
I'll say just a few words today because I do understand that there's intense media interest in Caitlin Armstrong's case.
Oh boy, there certainly was. Once the marshals brought her back to Austin, Caitlin Armstrong pleaded not guilty and hired this man to defend her, an attorney who exudes confidence, Rick Kofer.
You become a lawyer in part to work on cases like this.
Well, yes. But in this case, it looks like the public seems to have accepted the idea that they've got her dead to rights. They got her Jeep on Ring video. She goes out and sells her car and gets a plane ticket and flies to first see her sister and then down to Costa Rica and gets plastic surgery and dyes her hair brown. I mean, if she didn't do it, why go to all that trouble?
You know, looks really can be deceiving. What if I told you that about 98% of what you just said is either completely incorrect or mostly incorrect?
I'd love to hear your explanation.
Gofert, who happens to be a former prosecutor, said he had one, starting with Caitlin's supposed motive for murder.
The crux of law enforcement's theory, from within the first 24 hours of this case, they had decided that Caitlin Armstrong is a crazy, jealous person who, in a fit of rage, murdered Miss Wilson. What if I told you that Caitlin Armstrong, in fact, is not a jealous person?
Remember how Colin described her? The least jealous woman he ever knew. And the ballistics test that police said connected Caitlin's gun to the shell casings found near Mariah's body.
Ballistics analysis is functionally a junk science.
Junk science? Okay.
It is a type of witchcraft, if you will.
Well, hardly witchcraft, but not exactly gun DNA either. And it's true that the police affidavit says only that there is significant potential that Caitlin's gun fired the fatal shots, not absolute proof. But why did she run after her interview with the police? Because, said Kofor, she was afraid, but not of arrest. She was afraid that Colin could be a killer.
Her boyfriend of 3.5 years, her business partner, the person that she has lived with and made a life with, spent basically all day with homicide detectives being interrogated for murder. And Kate Armstrong is, as you can pretty well imagine, terrified. Her entire world is destroyed and shaken. Everything that she had understood is gone in a second.
And before she left town, said Kofor, Caitlin called a lawyer to see if she'd be in any legal trouble if she did.
He said, "You're free to travel. Go be with your family. You don't know what's going on, and certainly don't talk with Colin. He's a suspect for murder." And she did exactly that. She got on a plane and went to see her family, her closest family in New York.
At which time, Kofor pointed out, the arrest warrant had not yet been issued.
And she travels to New York Airport to fly to Costa Rica. And when she does that, there is no live, active warrant for her arrest. All told, she's lived years of her life abroad. It makes perfect sense that when her world is turned upside down, destroyed, and in a state of shock, she goes to Costa Rica to go do yoga stuff.
Did Caitlin use Christine's passport to go down to Costa Rica, her sister's passport?
If Caitlin Armstrong used a passport other than her own, that would be a completely separate legal issue.
So you do know, but you can't say.
It wouldn't be appropriate for me to comment.
As for the story about Caitlin having plastic surgery while in Costa Rica, Kofor's response is, prove it.
There's no evidence to indicate in any way that Kate Armstrong had any plastic surgery.
Of course, an employee at the surgery did ID her, but only based on photos of Caitlin in the media. And that receipt for surgery she left behind in Costa Rica, it had someone else's name on it.
The whole case against Kate Armstrong is predicated on a deeply misogynistic view of her. It is predicated on this fictitious idea that she is a jealous, scorned woman who, in a fit of rage, would do the most terrible thing that one could imagine.
But there is that key piece of evidence, the one that led investigators to Caitlin in the first place. Video of her Jeep at the crime scene at the time of the murder. And again, Kofor said, prove it, prove that's Caitlin's Jeep.
So this dark-colored SUV, that's where the detective really wants to start to hang this horrible crime on Caitlin Armstrong. There's no evidence presented ever of a license plate on this vehicle, of any description of an occupant of the vehicle.
Kofor said that can't be Caitlin in the Jeep, for one simple reason.
You can't be in two places at once. That's just kind of some simple math.
Okay. So you're saying that she wasn't in the vicinity of the murder when the murder occurred, and you can prove it?
I don't have to prove that. That's not
you
how the system works.
You just said simple math was an error, so that maybe they...
Let me put it this way.
It implies that you have proof.
I expect this. The government's own evidence will acquit Caitlin Armstrong. They just haven't looked at it.
He implied, but did not quite say, that in all that electronic evidence that police gathered, there was something that would exonerate Caitlin.
So one more shot. What are some of those things? I ask you, you know, one more time.
Sure.
I want to get as much of this as I possibly can.
I understand. All right. Here's what I'll give you. Let me think how I can say this in a way that doesn't compromise our defense and the element of surprise. It will come out as an uncontroverted fact the exact time that Miss Wilson was shot. That evidence will come out.
Mm-hmm.
And evidence will come out that Caitlin Armstrong was nowhere near the scene of Miss Wilson's murder at that time. And that's why this process has to actually work itself out. Our job is to see that justice is done. And a great wrong was done here. The killer needs to be held accountable. But Caitlin Armstrong is not guilty. And if this case goes to trial, if the district attorney doesn't dismiss it before trial, she will be found not guilty.
Shortly after we conducted this interview, the judge in the case issued, well, it was something like a gag order, and we'll have to wait for trial to hear the evidence. Maybe then we'll know for certain who took Mariah Wilson from this world, a world she seemed so ready to conquer.
What has the community lost with her loss?
I mean, to be honest with you, I think more about what her family has lost.
Sure. That's incalculable for sure.
Well, and I think that's part of how the community views this loss. You know, we didn't know Mariah for that long.
Those who did, not ready to talk on television, sent us these photos instead. Pictures to remember a beloved eldest daughter and big sister, who grew up and earned an engineering degree from Dartmouth and raced like the wind on skis and bicycles and was, said those who knew her, unfailingly kind.
That's all for this edition of Dateline. We'll see you again next Friday at 9, 8 Central. And of course, I'll see you each weeknight for NBC Nightly News. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, good night.